Good morning. Today is Friday, the 16th of April, the day after supposedly taxes are due or not due, traditionally. Joining us this morning is that gal about town, Karen Diemer. Good morning.
Good morning. It's great to be here.
great is always relative, right?
It's true. It's great to be with you and simultaneously be in Arcata.
Yeah.
That is great.
Yeah, well, that's a habit we're going to be breaking here shortly. So, oh, are you ready for our question this morning?
I am.
You are, huh? Okay. Do you get more colds in cold weather?
No.
Okay. Exposing the body to low temperatures will not in itself bring on the common cold. Colds are caused by viruses. However, the particular viruses that are most often causing colds tend to flourish best at low temperatures. Therefore, in cold weather, these viruses grow and multiply more rapidly in the body and eventually produce the common cold symptoms. So, partial credit given to the lady
in the corner. Yes and no. I had to say 50-50?
Yeah, you know, it was finally the opportunity for you to have a political response that was appropriate, and you choke on it. Oh, well.
All of the above.
Too late. Oh, boy. Well, I would imagine you've been getting a fair amount of comment and, to a certain extent, grief about the Jeff Pauley situation across the street from City Hall. Any thoughts, any comments, anything about that?
Yeah, well, I think it's just in general, we have seen, and I hear this, you know, at least countywide and likely statewide, you know, we've seen an increase in people really struggling as we, I think, the longevity of the pandemic, the toll that it's taken on mental health, for all of us that, you know, probably came in a pretty strong, secure position, you know, have struggled through the pandemic. So if you've come in already in, you know, partial mental health crisis into the pandemic, it's been very challenging.
Does anybody have, you know, I know that the county and the state are hell-bent for statistics, but are there any statistics that reflect the percentage of those with mental issues that are homeless or wandering, or however we want to do a broad stroke on that one, in Humboldt County versus the state versus the rest of the country on a percentage basis? Do we have more, less, the same amount percentage-wise?
Yeah. There may very well be people that have that statistic. It's not a statistic that I have seen locally. And I think it is difficult to diagnose. You know, I think that when houseless individuals that have maybe been living on the street for a very long time ultimately come into services, there is a myriad of issues that you slowly start to work through to finally understand the underlying cause. And so, you know, I think they go through multiple periods of kind of diagnosis. So, I mean, mostly what I'm speaking to is just what we are seeing anecdotally daily, you know, either in our from our service providers or from our police department or from our business community that, you know, have worked in and around the downtown area for many, many years.
Is there?
So there's a couple of things. So, I mean, yeah. We do have, there's kind of, I would say, sort of two strategies right now. About 3 weeks ago now, we did start, we got grant money through COVID. We used some of our COVID money. We hired two mental health clinicians from the county, but they're working full-time out of Arcata Police Department. So they're going out on calls with police. They're initiating their own contacts out in the community. So if there are individuals, you know, my message to the business community right now, if there are individuals that your business is consistently struggling with that need help and resources, please call the police department now, because we do have mental health clinicians that are now on staff 4 days a week. So that was the first piece that we've tried to deploy specific to address the mental health crisis that we're seeing. And then secondarily, we're really just working hard to try to fill the vacant spaces. I think what we've seen after a year of the pandemic, we've had several businesses that have closed. You know, Pacific Outfitters announced their closure. HSU opted to come and move into the downtown. So, I mean, they literally have leased the largest vacancy that we've seen in COVID. So we're able to fill that space. But Rico's Tacos just closed within the last few weeks. So we're starting to see more vacancies than we certainly saw in the first 6 to 9 months of the pandemic. So filling those spaces has been a priority to us as well, just to bring the population into the downtown area.
As you had made mention that if businesses see somebody who needs help, could that also be interpreted as if you've got somebody that's impacting your business or that is causing you problems in your business, give us a call?
Yeah, absolutely.
Okay.
Because what I hear from the businesses is that they're mixed. They understand that the person that is causing impacts directly to their business, they also recognize needs help.
Right? Oh, sure.
So they are hesitant to call the police because that's really not the kind of help they need. It's not an emergency situation. So my message is now we have mental health clinicians on staff that can come and assist.
Okay, so there's two possible mm-hmm. responses that the police department now has rather than just the one.
Yeah. And we're just, we're just a few weeks into the program, so we are just building, and it's not going to cure everything overnight, but already they've been able to get several individuals into housing, and they've gotten many more individuals connected to some services. So, we have great lists of resources. We have good personal contacts at County Department of Health and Human Services, but the truth is our staff is not up on the day-to-day exactly what's available for everybody. So to have these clinicians that are actually county employees but paid by our COVID grant monies and then stationed out of our police department, it is this direct link into services that we haven't had before.
When the COVID dollars run dry, are you going to continue to fund these positions?
It certainly is our intention. The city council identified 5 priority areas for goal setting, projects, and funding, and trying to find ways to fund mental health services in Arcata was one of those top 5 priorities. So we've got these funds for a year. We're looking at securing funds for the following couple of years, and then we will look at building funds to make those permanent, absolutely. We have to monitor their success and figure out what the program actually needs.
Sure.
To be successful. But yeah, this council is very committed to trying to solve what we're seeing in terms of mental health crisis on our streets.
It's 8:19.
Listen to 980 AM for the best music, ABBA, Neil Diamond, Barbra Streisand, Billy Joel, and the Fifth Dimension. The all-time best are heard every day, all day long on 980 AM. We are easy radio, easy on your ears and easy on your mind. This is memory-making music, and you'll love the memories you create. Tune in and hear the best music, easy radio, 980 AM.
Good morning, KINS News and Information Times, 8:24. We're back talking shop this morning with Arcata City Manager Karen Diemer. Karen, as you consider some of the different choices that are out there, and it's not just a question I've asked of you or will ask of you, but also for the other city managers and supervisors and folks in influential positions, is there any attempt, are you hearing anything at all about state-run mental health hospitals or facilities either being expanded, being brought back, the initial elements or stages of trying to locate one? Is there anything at all other than pushing it back to the county that the state is doing to help assist in the economic elements, in the humanitarian elements, in the cultural elements, anything associated with these folks that really do need to be receiving care and supervision?
Yeah. To answer your first question, I am not hearing any conversation around reinstatement of some of the statewide, mental health hospitals of the past. Where we have seen money come out of the state is around We're starting to see what used to be just straight housing, right? You could find money to construct housing, but you could never find money to actually operate that housing and to provide those wraparound support services. So where we are starting to see a change, or being told that we will see a change, is that the new housing monies that will be coming out in the next 24 months will carry funds for operational wraparound services. So whether it's on-site psychiatric or medical care, job retraining, just basic, you know, sort of occupational therapy about how to live, how to cook, how to shop, you know, whatever the level of needs of education are of the individuals that are being moved into the site, there will be money for operations and support. So that is a change that has resulted, I think, in part and maybe in whole because of local governments and service providers saying the housing is great, but if they don't know and can't at this point support to live on their own without services, then we're just seeing them back out on the street, and that is just, you know, counterproductive.
So, so housing for this definition is functioning within a house, not construction of new shelter.
Yeah, so there's a big push at the state right now for conversion of, you know, underutilized hotels. And, you know, they're calling it Project Home Key. During COVID, at first they were calling it Project Room Key, just getting people, you know, out of houselessness and into at least hotel rooms during COVID to get shelter in place and isolation. Has transitioned into this Project Room Key, which is buy old hotels that are underutilized and convert them into long-term housing. But along with that now comes on-site counselors, on-site security, a lot of times on-site meal prep.
So kind of like a dormitory.
Yeah, and then ultimately working on kind of peer-to-peer support groups. And so, I mean, there's, you know, there is certainly the discussion and the, I think, understanding that it takes more than just house to be able to support individuals who have found themselves, you know, to be homeless, right? There are reasons, underlying reasons, that they've ended up in that situation of without a house, and we need to address those underlying issues as well for them to be successful staying in housing.
Well, in mentioning housing, there's been an awful lot of regular discussion about the lack of entry-level, or now even, let's call it, below $400,000 homes in Humboldt County. Yeah, I know you guys have had a ton of construction with the student-related housing. Is there anything that Arcata or the sphere of influence of Arcata is doing, or are people talking to you about building homes, or how do we structure this thing? How do we permit it? How do we avoid the development fees so that we can have some entry-level employed regular guy, but I guess the old phrase was first-time homeowner, so that they can get into the equation but be able to get into it at something that isn't requiring some really goofy-loofy financing?
Yeah. Well, we're seeing in Arcata some of the projects that actually were approved in the earlier 2000s, like 2008, 9, 10, 12, are now starting to be constructed. So, and at points, well, we have a large project partnership with the Yurok Tribe. It's called the 30th Street Subdivision. So that'll be 36 units of housing. It was, it will have an affordability component to it because in order to get the project off the ground, went after a really large, substantial federal grant and actually brought in about $11.4 million into the project.
Wow.
But it will mirror sort of what you see as some of our, you know, kind of traditional smaller single-family homes, and then there are four banks of kind of fourplexes. But again, they would be individual subdivisions. You know, they would be individual parcels in the long term.
Is that just for tribal members, or is that for the community?
It doesn't have any restrictions. I think they will give preference to Yurok residents. But at this point, I haven't heard that it would be exclusive. It's not at this point being put into tribal trust. It's just working with the city through the development process like any other developer.
So they're just a developer then?
Yeah. And then we had another subdivision, which I think is more to what you're speaking to, just single family, smaller lot sizes. So you're not going to have the huge, huge backyard, but you do have some open space. And we've now seen, I've seen the third house that's heading into construction in that subdivision starting to be built. And then, you know, we've got some old subdivisions, like the Windsong subdivision that was built probably 25 years ago. And I've seen five. There were several, like, edge corner lots that were the less desirable lots. And I've seen almost all of those come under construction within the last 18 months. So,
sure, that would make a ton of sense. Ton of sense.
Yeah.
It's 8:30.
Hey, community. Times are rough right now. Retail shops may be closing, but the bulk flower market is still open and moving fast. We here at Bayer can help turn your flower harvest into cash today. Call Bayer Extraction House at 707-693-2222. That's 707-693-2222. Don't miss out. It is time to sell. Bayer Extraction House, your flower selling powerhouse.
Good morning, KINS, News and Information Time. It's 8:35. We're back talking shop this morning with Arcata City Manager Karen Diemer. Talk shop presented by CDH Painting, Redeck, Humboldt Termite and Pest Control, Murphy's Market, Baywood Golf and Country Club, Humboldt Bay Bistro, and Randall Sand and Gravel. Karen, considering some of the different challenges around housing, I mean, that seems to be one of those topics that never goes away. It's either development fees, it's traffic circulation, it's sidewalks, it's ADA, it's all of these things. But right now, the battle is the affordability. Is housing just going to be one of those areas that's always going to be in the spotlight because everybody's having to deal with it?
I think we have at least the perception of a finite resource up here. We have a great value for the environmental open space and rural nature around our cities, and it has focused us on infill, which then can be really challenging, right, when you really start to build. So I think one of the pieces we have started on what we call our infill strategic plan, because our predecessors built a strong policy around infill development, and in the last 5 years, what we've seen is that as that development now starts to come online, neighborhoods with real concerns over density and height and traffic and safety within their region. So, and what I think developers want more than anything is a surety. They want to know with certainty that if they come in with a set of designs, that it's going to be approved. And it's much easier to get community buy-in when you don't have the pressure of we need to get this development approved, right? It's going before the Planning Commission. It has legal rights to be heard. And now is your only chance to comment. So the hope is that we can go into neighborhoods where we do have space for housing development and work with those neighborhoods in the community to say, okay, these are the types of housing numbers that we need in our region, low income, moderate income, high income. And how do we want to spread them and what do we want them to look like? So not to say we're going to be in 100% agreement, but we can come up with a vision that the community supports, that developers then when they come in and say, this is what the community wants, if I propose this, I will be successful, I think takes the largest burden away from development right now.
But isn't there a built-in fallacy with that because of the amount of rental units that there are in pick a city, that there's always turnover? I mean, I will go back, and I know it's not apples to apples, but when Walgreens at Harrison and Eureka was permitted, and then the construction was getting ready about 2.5 years later, certain structures within the neighborhood had been resold. Those folks said that they weren't included in the process and they wanted to be, and it delayed it and caused a stink and increased cost because they hadn't been included. Well, you know, at some point you got to go, you know, there's a responsibility you have when you move in to understand what's going on in the neighborhood.
Right.
Can you take that position, draw that line in the sand and say, okay, from this point out, here's what's going on. And, you know, if you move in 6 months later or, you know, there's a certain responsibility that you have to do the research on the property to find out what's...
You can't make promises that, you know, that go out that far. But, you know, right now the city's
5 years?
General plan is 20 years right now, our general plan that we're working from now, right?
Yeah.
And most of those policies actually are serving this community fairly well. I think when, you know, when we've done our visioning, there are a lot of the policies that people want to keep. But I think on a five-year cycle, you should be able to refresh your neighborhood plans and have education and engagement that people understand. And as I said, you're never going to have 100% buy-in, but at least you are making those visionary compromise decisions prior to a developer having spent $500,000, $750,000, $1 million. It's not uncommon to spend that kind of money to prep a project to come before a planning commission or a city council or the board of supervisors. So if you can do the legwork ahead of time about what the neighborhood believes would be successful, I do think we will have a lot more success in construction from beginning to end.
There was a significant push, 25, 30 years ago, in Old Town. I guess it was before we realized that it was in the tidal wave zone, artist live workspace.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I think for most folks, we think of the old ethnic neighborhoods where maybe, let's say, Italians, because that's what's leaping in my mind, they would have the grocery store downstairs and the family would live upstairs.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, pretty straightforward, pretty simple. They own the building and there's a neighborhood even after business hours. Has that kind of faded or changed? I mean, I would think that there is a lot of space potentially upstairs, but okay, maybe parking will be an issue. Maybe some of the things that if it was brand new construction today can't be done. But, you know, if housing and affordability of housing is the primary goal of this thing, don't those other concerns kind of take a back seat?
I can't say that they've completely gone to the wayside. I think artist housing is still an issue in our region. I am seeing cities that are starting to look at how do they just really financially support having an artist community, and part of that is really focused on making sure that artists have a core salary that allows them to afford housing. So from a practical standpoint, if you want a vibrant art community, because resources are much tighter than maybe they were 30 years ago, there needs to be a way probably to subsidize that, is what we're seeing in other cities that have a little bit more money than our rural areas.
Yeah.
You know, I think it's been, when we lost redevelopment monies, and I understand maybe throughout the state there was some abuse in that program, but here on the North Coast, those redevelopment monies is what really got many projects off the ground. So when we look at our large malls that are in our smaller cities, not like the one big mall in Humboldt County, but when we look at where anchor stores are with Safeway or Ray's, all of those could be 2-3-story complexes with housing above, right? But that is a heavy financial lift to probably raise that entire structure, right? What I'm hearing from the development community is that doesn't pencil out to be doing demo and reconstruction at that level without some governmental infrastructure money coming in to support the base project.
Doesn't every entity pretty much agree that redevelopment was successful in their town?
Probably in their town because they chose to spend their money on what was important to them.
I'm just wondering why there wasn't enough moaning and groaning to bring it back, because I've not heard really anybody other than the fiduciary issue that you referenced that had any problems with it. It seemed like that was the way to get some stuff done on a local level, local determination, and things were getting done instead of now it's a little something else.
I feel like there was some traction a couple of years ago, but really Governor Newsom is very committed on housing, and so that's where the dollars are flowing.
Gotcha. KINS, News and Information Time, it's 844.
The Redwood Region Economic Development Commission wants you to know that local economic development agencies, business resource organizations, financial institutions, and jurisdictions are working together to provide resources for the COVID-19 pandemic. For more information, go to northcoastsbdc.org or call the OES Business Hotline at 268-2527. 268-2527.
Good morning, KINS News and Information Time. It's 8:46. We're back talking shop this morning with Arcata City Manager Karen Diemer. Karen, typically this time of the year we're talking about graduations and people flooding into Arcata for the graduations, et cetera, et cetera. We're, what, 3-4 weeks out from Mother's Day. Is there going to be a graduation ceremony this year at Humboldt?
Yeah, so they ended up surveying students, and the students said, yes, we want to have a ceremony on campus. So it is going to be spectator-free. They are not giving out passes for family members, although I think
really?
There are several families that still come into town. Yep.
They're not going to allow mom and dad to be there?
Mom and dad will be able to watch virtually. There'll be a live stream.
How big is that stadium? It's, what, 6,000, 8,000 people capacity?
Yeah.
They couldn't separate everybody by 25 feet and still have the parents in there?
I mean, and I think a lot of it is just, you know, how many people do we want coming to this region in terms of the travel advisories right now?
Oh, well, that's surely going to keep our tourist travelers away for the next 4 months, huh?
Yeah.
I mean, come on.
Oh, no.
That
it won't.
Yeah.
But the students are excited. You know, I kind of thought, would they come back if it was just for that? You know, but I've got a lot of students that work for us here. And they actually, and I've been working with them virtually because most of them are out of the area. But the seniors that I've taught you that are in the Bay Area or down in L.A. are saying, yeah, we're going to come back and we're going to do our commencement. So they are very excited to have an in-person commencement and to celebrate. They've got a big class that's graduating, and I think they'll be honoring some of last year's students and this year's students that didn't have the opportunity to walk last year. So we do congratulate all of our graduates. It's been not an easy time to be in college and to be able to persevere through learning how to virtually educate.
That's right. Less pizza and less beer was consumed by this class than any of the preceding 100. Yeah.
Well, I'm not sure about that, but.
Okay. In the dorm room and in your apartment. How's that if we put that as a qualifier on there? What does next year look like? Is it going to get more normal, or is the state system still going to have some of the edict that's been in place that they're saying at the high schools, Newsom is saying, all schools back to normal, one size fits all, push. Are they doing that at the UC and the state level also, or the state college level?
The university is planning for really two different levels. One would be a little bit similar, a little bit higher in face-to-face classroom participation than what we had this year. You know, we did end up with about 15% of classes that were held face-to-face. So they are expecting to have more on-campus classes, and they are planning for two different densities within the classroom, depending on what tier we're in come fall. But I think we're going to see a year that's much more, I guess normal is a word that we're all wondering what that means this year. So, but we're going to see a classroom experience that is much more similar to what we had seen in the past in the coming fall.
More akin to airplane separation than one per field.
Right.
Yeah.
Well, and the vaccine rollout, you know, I mean, we can all, you know, complain and wish for more and better, but I just have to say, like, this last few weeks, Humboldt County, we have been rocking the vaccines. Humboldt State has their staff and their faculty are vaccinated. We are at the community center here running close to 1,000 a day through. So if you have not signed up for my turn on the California site, you should if you want a vaccine.
Yeah, what was there?
We are going to get this county vaccinated.
There was like 5 or 10,000 shots that weren't spoken for last week. Yeah.
I think they need to ship
this stuff back down south where the problems are. And it's, you know, why have unmet needs up here? But hey, that's me. That's not you. So la-di-da. Enjoy your weekend. Thanks for coming by. All right. See you next.
Right.
We will see you next month.
Looking forward to it.
See everybody tomorrow.